the way that we choose, the choices that we make every day, are really affecting the world. Mm-hmm. And they're affecting the environment, they're affecting our culture, and they're affecting our health. And they are the most serious decisions. And I want people to pay attention mm-hmm. to this. And so you can have the hot dog on the train, but you better ask them where they got their hot dog.
Yeah. I'm not sure they know the answer to that question.
And I want to know that it's a grass-fed mm-hmm. beef yeah. hot dog. Yeah. You know, that's what's important. Well, where did the bun come from? And what's where did the flour come from?
Is it a good hot dog? That's all I want
to know. No, I want to know.
I don't care if as somebody who for many years enjoyed cigarettes and drugs, clearly I'm willing to swap a certain amount. I don't think my personal health or the purity of my colon is that important compared to pleasure. I see chefs. I'm not your dietitian or your ethicist. I'm in the pleasure business. My responsibility is to give you the best tasting tomato, not the most cruelty-free tomato, not the most local tomato, not the most organic tomato. Just the one that, you know, my responsibility is to give you the most delicious tomato that I can afford, given the circumstances, and maybe increase the likelihood that you get laid after dinner.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. Man, do I have a lot to cover. I do not know how I'm going to do this in under an hour, but I'm going to do my best. I'm not sure if you guys caught my post on Food Inc. on the blog at mylifeasafoodie.com, but two posts under the post for this episode is a special post that I made for the movie. It is now expanding every week all throughout the summer. And there's a list of cities and theaters and each date that the movie will be coming to your city, so it's really important, if you listen to the show, if you're a big fan of the show, that you see this movie. After we saw it, I said to Katrina, I said it was like listening to my show for 2 hours. They hit on all the topics that we've been discussing for the past 2 years. And it had information about big ag business that I really didn't even know about. And it was really eye-opening. I mean, here are some facts that are from Food Inc. that stood out amongst all the other points that the movie made, to me anyway, and on some of these facts, how I think you might be able to make a change, how you might help to change this. And I think that if we spread the word, that we can all make a change. In the 1970s, the top five beef packers controlled about 25% of the market. Today, the top four control about 80% of the market. Now, how can you help? I think by buying from independent growers who refuse to do business with large businesses, that would be a good start. In the 1970s, there were thousands of slaughterhouses producing the majority of beef sold. Today, we have 13. Again, how can you help there? Your independent growers might have independent abattoirs that they use to do their slaughtering, or they might do them themselves. So there's something else to consider. In 1998, the USDA implemented microbial testing for Salmonella and E. coli, so that if a plant repeatedly failed these tests, the USDA could shut down the plant. After being taken to court by the meat and poultry associations, the USDA no longer has that power. A lot of these come down to legislation, so we kind of have to change the law. In 1972, the FDA conducted 50,000 food safety inspections. In 2006, the FDA conducted only 9,164. During the Bush administration, the head of the FDA was the former executive VP of the National Food Processors Association. Oops. During the Bush administration, the chief of staff at the USDA was the former chief lobbyist for the beef industry in Washington. Prior to renaming itself an agribusiness company, Monsanto was a chemical company that produced, among other things, DDT and Agent Orange. Then in 1996, when it introduced Roundup Ready soybeans, Monsanto controlled only 2% of the U.S. soybean market. Now, over 90% of soybeans in the U.S. contain Monsanto's patented gene. There's a scene in this movie where Monsanto leans on this guy who creates this seed cleaning thing that these farmers can use to reuse their seeds for next season. Well, Monsanto stakes claimed all their seeds now, so you can't clean seeds. And they really put pressure on him and pretty much bankrupt the guy. And it's horrible to watch. And they don't give a shit. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was an attorney at Monsanto from 1976 to 1979. After his appointment to the Supreme Court, Justice Thomas wrote the majority opinion in a case that helped Monsanto enforce its seed patents. This gets back to what we were talking about earlier. The average chicken farmer invests over $500,000 and makes $18,000 a year. Now, what can you do about this? Don't buy any Tyson chicken products. Watch the film and you'll follow me on this. They are the devil. It's sickening. Tyson sucks. I knew Tyson sucked back when I lived in Arkansas. Now it's even worse. And it goes a lot further than this. Immigration, you name it. 32,000 hogs a day are killed in Smithfield Hog Processing Plant in Tar Heel, North Carolina, which is the largest slaughterhouse in the world. And you should see how these pigs are treated there. Smithfield. That sounds familiar. Who does advertisements for Smithfield? Let me give you a hint. Her name rhymes with Paula Deen. Paula Deen is an irresponsible person. She shouldn't be on television handing out recipes that will eventually kill you anyway. And she certainly shouldn't be glamorized by anybody. She shills inferior pork products for a company that treats people like shit. And pigs like shit, for that matter.
Hey, y'all.
30% of the land in the U.S. is used for planting corn. The modern supermarket now has, on average, 47,000 products, the majority of which is being produced by only a handful of food companies. 70% of processed foods have some genetically modified ingredient. Here's one that got me. SB 63, Consumer Right to Know Measure, that required that all food derived from clone animals be labeled that way, actually passed the California State Legislature before being vetoed in 2007 by Governor Schwarzenegger, who said that he couldn't sign a bill that preempted federal law. Now, ask me how you can help on this. Here's how you can help. When this guy gets out of office, don't go see any more of his movies, because he's an attention whore, and you know the minute he's out of office, he's going to go back to Hollywood so we can be in the limelight again. Schwarzenegger, like Paula Deen, is an asshole.
I'll be back.
But getting back to the corn thing, high fructose corn syrup products. Amazing. Ketchup, cheese, Twinkies, batteries, peanut butter, Cheez-Its, salad dressings, Coke, jelly, sweet and low, syrup, rice, Kool-Aid, charcoal, diapers, Motrin, meat, all fast food, high fructose corn syrup. Corn is the main ingredient in animal feed. It's used as a food additive, so it's in like everything. Cellulose, xylitol, maltodextrin, saccharin, sucrose, sorbitol, high fructose corn syrup, of course, vanilla extract, margarine, starch, white vinegar, ethyl acetate, ascorbic acid, baking powder. 1 in 3 Americans born after 2000 will contract early onset diabetes. Among minorities, the rate will be 1 in 2. E. coli and salmonella outbreaks have become more frequent in America, whether it be from spinach or jalapenos. In 2007, there were 73,000 people sickened from the E. coli virus. And the last one worth noting is that organics is the fastest food growing segment, increasing 20% annually. Fad? Possibly, but a good fad. I even said, if everybody who listens to my show that doesn't like me would buy that movie, I would promise to stop podcasting. I'd stop the show. I'd quit it if you bought that movie when it came out on DVD. I wouldn't have to sit here and preach the same thing over and over and over, because it's that powerful. It's that on the nose. Okay, so I have a lot to discuss here, and I wanted to do it chronologically, but I did a dry run of it, and it just seemed so detailed, and there was too much information. I thought, I'm going to put them to sleep. And this is going to sound strange, but the process of my show is really kind of simple. I write down topics that I want to discuss as they come to me. It could be working, or if I'm doing something, I go, oh, I want to talk about this, or if you see something on the internet, I'll write it down. And I'll keep this you know, page that has about 8 to 10 topics on it. I'm going to get to that amount. I'll stop and I'll say, okay, this is going to be my show. Then on my commute into work, which takes me about an hour, I'll do a dry run in my car. So I am doing my show in my car. I talk to myself, just like I'm doing right now, except I don't have a microphone on a PC when I'm in my car. So by the time I get to the microphone here, I pretty much know what I want to say about everything, and I just repeat what I said in my practice run. And that's pretty much how my show goes. That's my process. That's how I'm able to assemble my thoughts. So when I get to work that day, I found out I hadn't even gone halfway through it, and I knew I was in trouble. So I thought I should simplify this a little bit. And if you listen to the Rubicon interview that I posted last week, earlier in June, prior to the Last Supper show, Katrina and I went on a long weekend trip to Sacramento. She had something going on for work, and we went there. Sacramento is our state's capital. And it was the first time I had been to my state's capital. I'd been to other state capitals, but never mine. 44 years, I'd never seen my own capital. I met up with Rick Sellers of Pacific Brew News on Friday. She was in her class. And then later on Saturday, we met Rick and his awesome wife, Tracy, and we spent the entire day together. And on Saturday, we met Peter Huey, who's the brewmaster from Sacramento Brewing Company, and his gorgeous daughter, Lorelei. It was so cute and quiet. We call babies like her bait children because they bait you into having another one. Because you think they're all going to be like this? Then you have a monster. Believe me, I've seen it. And then later we met Sean Paxton and his wonderful wife, Arlene. More foodies. But, you know, you hear somebody say so many great things about their city or where they live and how great everything is. Then you go and it's kind of a letdown. It's a disappointment because they oversold it. And even though I know Rick to be a man of style, likes the good stuff, he really knows his shit, I thought maybe he'd done a little overselling on Sacramento, but he didn't. And everything he brought to me was incredible. And when I think about it, it should be incredible. I mean, look where it is. Look at Sacramento on the map. Then go a little west, and you're in France, you know? Napa and Sonoma, just an hour or so away, that's France. That's what Eric Repair called it. And they were in Napa when they were going to French Laundry on a cook's tour with Bourdain. He says, it looks like France. And it's true. It's the food and wine mecca of California. Just like France. Sometimes better. And these guys are total foodies. Rick and Tracy, foodies. Sean and Arlene, foodies. Pete and I assume his wife as well, total foodies. They grow up with this stuff. It's in their blood. So Friday, I'm killing time before Rubicon. It opens at like 11. So I'm driving around town with my GPS, thank God. Looking for a grocery store to buy some Snicky Snacks for a hotel room. You know, you like to snack at night or you like to have water or crackers or whatever. So I find Trader Joe's. And Trader Joe's is like my grocery store of grocery stores. And I find that I feel like I'm at home. So I buy a few things. I get back to my car. Sellers calls me. Where are you? I said, oh, I just left Trader Joe's. He goes, oh, no, don't go there. You need to visit Cordy Brothers. It's right down the street. I'm like, dude, what do you mean don't go there? I just came out of there. I just left Trader Joe's. Got a bag of groceries. So I said, screw it, I'll go anyway. So I find this store, Cordy Brothers. He tells me where to go. Let me tell you something. This ends up being the end-all, be-all mecca of grocery stores. Your hunt for the perfect grocery store ends at Cordy Brothers. I walk into this store. It smelled like an old grocery store. And it should smell like an old grocery store because it's old. 1947. Frank Cordy and his brother Gino decide to open this grocery store, and they call it Cordy Brothers. Their primary mission was to expand the culinary experiences of the people of Sacramento by bringing food and wine from around the world to the people in Sacramento. Because it's unavailable everywhere else, they're bringing it to this one spot. They wanted to enrich the lives of the people of that city. That was their mission. And let me tell you something. This would enrich the life of anybody. And this is the best way I can describe this, really. Take your favorite Italian deli, all right? Then add the most high-end gourmet store you can find, a Spanish grocery store that sells chorizo, Spanish olive oils, olives, salt, cod, anything that Jose Andreas uses on his show. Then add the largest cheese selection that you can find, all the best beers from your favorite beer store, the best wines available from California and Europe, caviar, lots of really good caviar, not the cheap lumpfish stuff, the fresh bread from the bakery that you like to go to. a meat counter with everything you could ask for, hormone-free pork with a sign saying that they only buy from selected growers that they know produce drug-free pigs, ducks, geese, offal, North Point oysters, rack of lamb, amazing beef, big cowboy ribeyes, 3 inches thick, with the bone frenched so it sticks out of the steak, fresh vegetables, locally grown, everything in season, fresh morel mushrooms, whatever happens to be in season. Right there, it said morels. They were gone, of course. But they had, you know, other types of mushrooms there as well. An olive oil aisle that seems to go on forever. Balsamic vinegar sold in a glass case. So unique that these have their own boxes, and they're numbered on the bottles. Demi-glace. An aisle of Japanese sake cups in glass cases. Some made of bamboo, definitely imported from Japan. And a magazine rack that sells only the best food and wine magazines, the high-end stuff, Savoir, Wine Spectator, Gastronomic Quarterly. Take all those different stores, wrap it up into one grocery store. That's Cordy Brothers. I was beside myself. I'm such a sick bastard that I have dreamt of shopping in a grocery store just like this.
Will you stop it? Are you out of your mind?
I'm not joking. You want to learn something about me? I have dreams like this. I have at one point dreamt about this store. I was walking around in a daze. I was laughing when I'd see stuff. I found a bottle of Bolognier, the champagne of James Bond, right there in the cooler, $89. You want it? Take it. It's yours. I didn't buy it, but it was there. I could have bought it if I wanted to. Magnums of our favorite table wine, La Ferme. I've never seen magnums of that before. I think I may have dreamt about that. And there it was. You know when you dream, you always dream big? You know, you don't want just a bottle of wine. You want a big bottle of wine. You don't want a sausage. You want a sausage the size of a coffee table. That's the kind of store this was. Frank's son, Daryl, so educated about food and wine. Ruth Reichel, who's Gourmet Magazine's editor, she called him the man who knows more about food and wine than anyone else in the world. And you'd expect these people to be snotty, but they're not. They're anything but that, really. They're very friendly. The manager of the meat department, Mike Nichols. So the next day, we're there with Katrina and all of them. And I'm talking about meat with Rick. And he starts talking to me. He goes, hey, you know a lot about meat. I go, no, I don't know a lot about meat. I like meat. I know some things, but not everything. Not a lot. And he starts telling me he's been working there 30 years since he was 19. He's been working there for over 30 years. This guy over here is our beer guy, 27 years. The woman at the deli counter is a total newbie, 17 years. I was just super impressed. And it wasn't just me. I knew that this was special. Everyone else said the same thing. Cordy Brothers, 5810 Folsom Boulevard, Sacramento, California. If you want to check them out on the web, cordybros.biz, CORTIBROS.biz. Amazing. Just amazing. I would move there just to be able to say that that's my grocery store. And you know what? I might just start telling people that's my grocery store. You know, because if I was up there, that's where I'd be shopping. People who shop at a store like this shop there for life. In fact, they were in the news last fall. Rick told me this story. The land that they're releasing was up for grabs. And the people who owned the land wanted to lease it to this other company that wanted to build something new and fresh. So the customers of Cordy Brothers find this out. And they start protesting in front of the store. It was a PR nightmare for them. And before long, the other place said, yeah, you know what, forget it. We'll just build somewhere else. So Cordy Brothers got a few more years on their lease, and it's renewed. But I'm telling you, man, that's a grocery store. Ralph's, Kroger's, Stater Brothers, Vaughn's, you can all kiss my ass. This is how you run a store. When you shop there, you're family. So you know about Rubicon. After Rubicon, Rick takes me to this place called The Shack. It's like eating on someone's patio. This place is beat up. Beaten up furniture. It's kind of dirty. But the food, incredible. It's just so quaint. Unassuming and quaint. They have herbs growing outside the building in the perimeter. They have those little planter boxes that are attached to it. Herbs all the way around the place. So if they're cooking something, they need an herb, they go outside, they pick it, and they use it in their food. Really good beer, too. Served in just the right glassware. This is funny, too. I was drinking Maretsu, is that how you pronounce it? I was drinking it from a goblet. They poured it in a goblet. Owner comes by, starts talking to Rick, says, hey, what are you having? I tell him, he gets pissed off that they served this beer to me in the wrong glass. Well, that's a beer snob. It was fine, you know? I guess it was supposed to be served in a tulip or something. I don't know. Well, this place has a website, too. East Sac Shack. EastSacShack.com. EastSacShack.com. Awesome place. Awesome atmosphere. Again, like I said, completely unassuming. And Rick tells me they have like Belgian beer dinners and stuff there sometimes. Anyway, so we went back there on Saturday. We were going to have breakfast there. So we meet for breakfast. Rick and Tracy are going to drive us everywhere. They picked us up at a hotel, which I thought was just really nice of them to drive us around. They basically taxied us the entire day. Peter Hoey from Sacramento Brewing meets us with his daughter at the shack, but electricity was out for like an hour, so we weren't going to hang around. We couldn't eat breakfast there, so we went to Cordy Brothers, where I met the meat guy, Mike Nichols, and Katrina gets the tour and is blown away by it, and then Rick buys this chunk of goat cheese that's locally made and a loaf of bread. So we go outside, and we eat this cheese and the bread right on the back of Peter's truck, just standing there chomping it on it. It was outstanding. And his cheese was really good. It tasted like a blue cheese that hadn't quite hit the funk stride yet, you know? It was goat cheese, but it was getting to be funky. Good stuff. Anyway, from there, we went to a coffee shop, had some coffee. This place was called Temple Coffee, and it was very good, very nice coffee. Quaint little, you know, college town type of coffee shop. And then after this, it got interesting, because they took us to this place, this Chinese restaurant for dim sum, where we met up with Peter, Sean Paxton, in Arlene. And the place is called King's Restaurant. And they do traditional Chinese dim sum. And traditional Chinese dim sum is where you sit at a table and they don't hand you a menu. They just bring you tea, right? So you have hot tea. And the cooks are in the back cooking 100 dishes or however many they cook. And slowly they start rolling out these carts with all these bowls on them with all the food on it. So if you see something you like, you say, I'll have this, and we'll have this, and we'll have this. And then, you know, you eat, and then food comes back by, and if you see something you like, you pick it. If you're waiting for something in particular that you know they make, you wait until it gets there. Now, when we sat down, I looked at the table next to us. These people had chicken feet on the table. I looked at Rick and I said, dude, I have to have chicken feet. If they're cooking chicken feet, I'm eating them. I saw Andrew Zimmern eat them, and I have to try them, because that's the rule here. So they came, eventually, and we had them, and they were really good. Batter-fried and then smothered in a star anise type of sauce. Tons of bones. You know, they say you have like 1,000 bones in your foot. I think chickens have like 2,000. But the texture was perfect. For me, it's all about texture for me. But I'm spitting out bones like nuts. It's a pile of bones. Anyway, I can say I've eaten chicken feet now. So Paxton shows up. And when this guy shows up, he owns the room. The man is one of the nicest guys you can ever meet. He's a guy who just loves to talk about food. He should have a show. Sean Paxton should have a food show. I ask him a question. I go, hey, Sean, how's sourdough properly made? He had an answer for me. Oh, he also told me, if you want to make really good dough for bread, you make the dough, you let it rise, then you cut it into pieces, you put it in the fridge, give it a few days, and then let it rise slowly at 50 degrees. That's when all the good stuff happens. Tons of little tidbits of information like this. The guy's full of it. Talks about food. Talks and talks. At one point, Rick leans in. He goes, dude, you should be recording this. And I wish I had. He talked about stuff like he knows everything about everything that has to do with food. How it works, why it works, and what makes it work. And what makes it what it is, really. He's like the Wikipedia of food with a really badass goatee and a really cool laugh. And he's a good hugger. I mean, some people hug you, and they treat you like you have AIDS. Now, this guy hugs you like he means it. I'm serious. I mean, this guy had an answer for everything. I was going to ask him where, you know, Jimmy Hoffa was buried, but I figured if he answered, he'd have to kill me. Anyway, so after that, which was just epic, it's Peter's turn to blow our face off. Now, we go to Sacramento Brewing. Peter is the brewmaster there, and he serves a whole flight of beers for me from Sac Brew, along with Mirror Mirror from Deschutes, which is a barley wine, and then starts giving me samples of all the Cascade Sour Belgians. Every single one of Peter's beers, whether it's the standard beers that they serve year-round at the brewery, or the Cascade beers, all different in their own way, and very drinkable. He has gone through every one of the recipes at Sac Brew and tweaked them and made them perfect. And they are just very, very dead on good. And that's a really cool way to spend a day with a brewmaster talking about his beer as you're drinking it. But everything he brews is extremely, you know, it's different, but it's extremely drinkable, you know. And I know that people put their nose up to sour Belgians because they, you know, they kind of taste like medicine. But these don't. I mean, some can, but these don't. They bring out all the qualities of the ingredients, the yeast, the malt, and the oak that they're being aged in. You can taste all the subtleties in everything that Peter brews. And he gave me a bottle of beer that he named after his daughter when she was born. It was like a commemorative beer. So that's getting aged. It's in the cellar now. At some point, someone rolled out a small snifter of Sierra Nevada's Bigfoot barley wine from 2004. Oh, God. These guys are really into barley wines. And I wasn't before this trip, but like now I get it. So, okay, so then we split up from there. Peter took off. The Paxtons took off. And then later we went to a smoke shop that sells smoked sausages. That was another overkill moment. This place had everything smoked. Smelled heavenly. So we bought some snack sausages for the road. They were great. Slim Jim, no. This is smoked sausage. So we end up, our last stop, we ended everything, and in true style, was Auburn Ale House. Now, I knew of Auburn Ale House because Rick had talked about it a lot. If you listen to Pacific Brew News or read his blog, you'll know about it too. Auburn Ale House is located in Auburn, California. It's right off of Highway 80. It's a very small town. It's a quaint town, very quiet town. And if you live in California and you've driven on Highway 80, at some point you probably have passed Auburn. If you're on your way to Reno or Lake Tahoe, or if you're on your way home from Reno or Lake Tahoe, the next time you go to either of these destinations and you're on 80, make Sunday a little bit longer. Make that drive home a little longer and more pleasurable. Stop by Auburn Ale House. Have lunch or an early dinner. Relax. Have a pint of pale ale or his dry hopped IPA or his Irish stout. Oh, man, he makes a good stout. Brian and Lisa Ford own this place. They've done an incredible job. Brian Ford is the owner and he's the brewmaster and has been a passionate home brewer for a very long time. And it shows in his craft now that he's a professional. It's located in Old Town Auburn. Auburn Ale House Brewery and Restaurant. It's right in the middle of everything in the historic American Block building, which used to be a Chinese restaurant. It burned down and Auburn Ale House grew up. And it's got some Hollywood ties, too, because I guess they shot some scenes from Phenomenon, that John Travolta movie. They shot some scenes there. So we sit on the back patio, right? We had a flight of their beers, had some food, and an incredible double IPA that they brought out. And then a barley wine that Rick makes him whip out. And a really good old-fashioned. Now listen, I'm not into alcoholic mixed drinks all that much. Like, I enjoy tequila once in a while. I appreciate scotch every now and then. But mixed drinks, not really my thing. Wine, beer, champagne for the most part. But this old-fashioned, good Lord. Old-fashioned is a drink that's meant for a dude, but it's custom-made for a woman. Katrina loved this. And it's rare when you find breweries that make good mixed drinks. But they do it. And we ordered food. They had a plowman's platter, which is like one of the things I like to have a lot. It's one of my favorites. Cheese, assorted meats and sausages, and some crackers or some bread, and then some unique nachos that they make with fried wonton wrappers instead of tortillas, and that's served in a sesame oil vinaigrette. Really good. Very Asian. I love Asian fusion. It's brilliant. Okay, so we're sitting on the patio, right? This is great. Brian comes up, starts buying us drinks. I'm thinking, oh, shit, I'm in trouble. This band starts playing. They play some rock, a little blues, some R&B fusion, and then they're silent for about 3 minutes. People start clapping. They start playing again. I turn around. There's this woman. She looks like Tina Turner. She's wearing this big black shirt that says Black Queen on it. She's pushing 60, but she's sexy as hell. Singing her ass off for about an hour. Incredible voice. Very charismatic. Flirting with all the guys. Practically made out with Sellers right in front of everybody. It's one of the funniest times I've ever had at a brewery. Ever. I mean, this place lit the town up. And the city of Auburn loves this place. Brian needs something, they get it for them. And they should, because I don't know what the rest of this town is like, but this is like the Capitol building. As far as I'm concerned, this is like the center of the universe. Auburn Ale House, one of those places that makes you feel at home the minute you get there. You're sitting on the patio, drinking a really good crafted brew, having some really good food, listening to really good music, and just enjoying yourself. Right in the middle of nowhere, it seems, you're like it's a town surrounded by nothing. I didn't catch her name, but God love the Black Queen. She was the best. Anyway, auburnalehouse.com. Check it out. If you're on Highway 80, on your way to or from Reno or Lake Tahoe, stop in, have a pint. And that topped off an incredible day, an incredible trip. I came back enriched, and like I put in the title, Capital Gains, I gained a newfound respect for Sacramento as a food culture-rich area. I gained new friends, a ton of knowledge. I mean, I came back with a lot of information. I don't know why I waited 44 years to visit. I really don't know.
I was at McDonald's. I gave these guys $10. They gave me one burger and a fry and told me to park.
Sir, I believe you just talked to my partner a moment ago, and he advised you this is not a 911 emergency.
This is a 911 emergency. I got robbed for $8.
The 911 operators in Clackamas County hear a lot in their line of work, but a call like this...
You cannot tell me I can call 911 and not get a cop right here.
Sir,
you can tell me I can't get a cop right here at 82nd and Sunnyside Road. I will sue your office right now.
Authorities would eventually send an officer and arrest this man, 23-year-old Jeremy Martin. He was charged with inappropriate use of 911.
Failure to comply, duty vest violation.
Andrew Michelson was the first 911 dispatcher to get the call.
Copy, do they have 24 hours to come get it, or do they need to come out right away?
He fields, on average, more than 100 calls a day. The 911 center fields more than 800 calls, and in a job when every second counts, a call about a burger and fries does not constitute an emergency.
It's unfortunate that sometimes people with a medical emergency might get put on hold for a second to go grab one of those other lines, and when it's a non-emergency, you know, it's taking time away from being with them.
That's why these hard workers want the public to know that this...
Sir, okay, stop. Listen, 911 is for life or death emergencies only. By you calling 911, you can be arrested for... Sir, listen to me. Sir, listen to me. Stop.
...is inappropriate.
You know, Mike Judge made a movie a couple of years ago called Idiocracy, and it depicted what our country was going to be like in like 100 years. Everybody was stupid. Fast food was the only food we ate. We were extremely dumbed down and irrational. This CNN story was right out of that movie. I swear to God. I mean, are people really this stupid? Seriously? This guy threatened to sue 911 for not helping him get his $8 back from McDonald's because he overpaid for his burger and fries. Oh, my God. I gotta wonder, what the hell is in the food that's making people this stupid? If CNN played that report on April 1st, I'd have said, no, that's April Fool's joke. But this was true. God, it was funny, man. That was all over the news, too. So thanks to CNN for that audio. That was good. Listen, not to hammer too much beer talk home here, but I do have a couple more things to talk about while we're here. Patrick Rue at the brewery is slowly becoming the Jesus to home brewers in Orange County. Seriously, he not only opens this incredibly successful brewery in the OC, you know, because we needed it, but now he starts this homebrew shop in his brewery. So if you live in Orange County or anywhere near Placentia, and you don't want to have to drive all the way into Laguna Niguel or Long Beach or freaking Riverside to buy ingredients, you can now order your homebrew stuff online at thebrewery.com. Then stop by the brewery on your way home from work or wherever and pick up your stuff. Now listen, the online store is not open yet. I should qualify that. Right now, you could like go to the brewery and then pick up your stuff. Pretty soon, they're going to have an online store. But bookmark thebrewery.com right now, because I'm telling you something. This is going to kick ass. I mean, I thought, great. I move away from the area. He opens a homebrew supply shop. It's an incredible idea, and I totally stand behind it. And I hope it influences people to brew and really hammers home what I've been saying about Patrick for a long time. This guy knows how to give back. You can't help but root for a guy like this, for Rachel, for Tyler, for all the brewery staff. They give a damn. Just like Cordy Brothers, they're bringing something great to you in hopes that maybe it'll enrich your life a little bit. Patrick loves beer. He loves brewing. He sees its success as a blessing and wants to continue to see craft beer grow. And how do you do that? Well, by helping homebrewers. Look at it this way. People show up to his brewery in his tasting room. They drink beer there, and they think, this is great. Hey, how can I make this? Well, look at these ingredients. Pretty soon, you know, you got another guy brewing beer. A couple years down the line, he's a professional brewer. He's making craft brew. You follow that? I don't have enough good things to say about Patrick, about his brewery, about what they're doing. It'll be a while, but the online shop is going to be open soon enough. So if you're in the area, you visit the tasting room when it's open Friday through Sunday. You can buy provisions there in person. And then the website will be a portal where you can order, pick it up there, or just have it delivered. And Beer Wars is available on DVD, and Patrick is selling it. Go to beerwarsmovie.com/shop. Pick up the DVD there, or you can buy it at the brewery. Brewery now is, I guess, one of the only retail locations right now that actually sell the DVDs, so you can get it there. I have not seen this movie yet, but I will see it soon. I'm going to get a copy. I'll review it. And, you know, the reviews were mixed, but I really don't want to talk about it until I actually see it. I was approached a couple weeks ago by Miranda, who's the publicist for MyRecipes.com. This website is pretty incredible. She gave me some insight on what they're doing. I tell you something. As you well know, I'm not a recipe guy. People ask me for recipes a lot. And I really don't know where to send them. And the reason for this is very simple. I don't trust recipes that you see online. Half the time, they're from Jane's Kitchen or some guy just making stuff up. I mean, I've tried recipes from the web. 75% of them work. And if they're not kitchen tested, then I'm not going to stand behind them. And especially if they're not healthy. MyRecipes.com is different, and this is really valuable. They have a staff of dietitians that work there, and they kitchen test everything. They're tried and true recipes. These are recipes that appear in Real Simple, All You, Cooking Light, Southern Living, Sunset, Coastal Living, and Health magazines. The website offers step-by-step instructions. They have how-to videos, entertaining tips, healthy cuisine tips. It's good stuff. Each recipe has to be approved by a team. You have food editors, test kitchen professionals, chefs, dietitians, food scientists. All those people have to say it's okay before it hits their website. So I'm looking forward to diving into that. And I'm going to bring an interview here either on the show, live, on the blog, however I can do it. In the meantime, check out MyRecipes.com. Browse through their catalog. It's pretty impressive. And it all looks very healthy. We have to remember one important thing here. Healthy. Because, yeah, cooking at home is great. But just because you cook at home doesn't mean you can go crazy. You got to try to keep things healthy. I mean, it's okay to go nuts now and then. But if every recipe you're making has bacon, mayonnaise, cheese, ranch dressing, or canned ingredients in it, you know, you're taking one step forward and two steps backward. Ease up a little bit. Keep things fresh and simple. You'll feel better about it. And listen, it tastes awesome.
Tainted peanuts, E. coli in spinach, salmonella in Mexican jalapeno peppers, all recent examples of the gaping holes in the nation's food safety system. The Food and Drug Administration inspects less than 1% of the food imported into the United States and is currently powerless to force a company to recall dangerous foods.
Right now, they don't have that authority, which is kind of an astonishing thing. They have to negotiate with the company and get the company to do the recall. And it's decades late for us to have that authority for the FDA. They should be able to have that right now.
The FDA would have that authority and more under new legislation being considered in the House. Representative Diana DeGette is one of the bill's sponsors.
It allows an increase of inspections. It also gives the FDA more powers to get records that they need. It gives them subpoena power. And then it also gives the FDA the ability to have a mandatory recall.
The FDA would also be required to inspect high-risk food manufacturers or processors at least once a year. Consumer groups say currently inspections of domestic plants average once every 10 years. The bill also calls for a new system that can trace food from the field to a consumer's plate. Industry groups oppose parts of the legislation, objecting to new authority that the FDA will have to quarantine foods, new paperwork requirements, and opposing a user fee of $500 levied on food companies to pay for the added oversight.
I run a trade association that has many very small members who are going to be extremely challenge to comply with this regulation.
The Food Safety Bill has passed the full Energy and Commerce Committee and is expected to be voted on by the full House later this summer.
Now, I hope you were paying attention there, because these big conglomerates, these big businesses that are controlling the food that you're eating, that come, all the stuff that comes from South America, Central America, the hot houses, the other farms that aren't independently owned, they're going to try to lead you to believe that this is going to shut down your small farmers that you buy from at the farmer's market, or that it's going to raise the prices on the stuff that you're buying from them. They're not the ones being targeted. Go back, listen carefully. At-risk food production facilities, Mexican growers, those that are actually causing the problems that we have with E. coli and Salmonella. They're being targeted. And if they can't get their shit straightened out, forget about it. They got to go. There are good growers, then there are bad growers. And I'm all about the independents. I love this story. I knew it was coming. God bless CNN. I love this story. You see independent farmers doing their thing, not tied to big businesses that control most of our farmers. They're completely fucked up all the time. Sorry. Gotta use that word. You get into bed with big business, it's like being in the mafia. Once they've got you, they control you, and it's horrible for you. It's really bad, and it has changed our food landscape. So we've got to bite back by refusing to give them our money. And you know where it starts? It starts by not going to McDonald's, Jack in the Box, Burger King, Wendy's, Del Taco, Taco Bell, Carl's Jr., Applebee's, Olive Garden, Chili's, name a chain, insert name here. If they're not independently run, chances are they're tied to big business and they're causing the problem. They're my enemy and they're the enemy of my show. And they should be your enemies too, so stop going, please. Dave's Burger Shack on the corner, or whatever hole in the wall you have. I'm sure they make a fantastic burger. It may not be right off the freeway, might not be convenient, they might not have a drive-through, and it certainly will not be a dollar for a cheeseburger. But they deserve your business a lot more than these assholes at McDonald's and Carl's Jr., Padma. Stupid ass.
I've always had a love affair with food. I think I've tasted every flavor imaginable. But there's something about the Western bacon.
Sure. You look like you eat that stuff all the time. You know something else? Restaurants and meat markets, they gotta stop advertising Kobe beef. It's not Kobe beef. It's Wagyu. It's made from Kobe steer. I don't know how they get away with advertising this. It's clearly illegal to sell Kobe beef in the U.S. So listen to this. This is a connection I got through Joe and Afaf and Charles from 100 Miles. Carrie Oliver from Oliver Ranch on Twitter. She said, hey, anybody have a question about beef? I said, yeah, I do. I said, how can they do this? She goes, it's likely that they were raised in North America or Australia, but not Japan. And since Kobe isn't trademarked, it's technically not false advertising. However, she, you know, prefers Wagyu Angus. I mean, Kobe's okay. Well, yeah, I'd prefer it too, since it's going to be like 10 times more expensive. But hey, locally grown, I'm eating it. I just don't get it. So if you see Kobe, say, oh, I'm eating Kobe burger. No, you're not. It's a Kobe steer, but it's not Kobe beef from Japan. And it's certainly not worth the, 30 times more than you would pay for a regular burger price that you're paying. There's another interesting story here, too, that Katrina sent me from, I think, the Wall Street Journal. It says, shopping becomes a challenge as auto industry collapse adds to city's woes. In Detroit, they call this the Motor City, but you have to leave town to buy a Chrysler or a Jeep. There was a time early in the decade when downtown Detroit was sprouting new cafes and shops, and residents began to nurture hopes of a rebound. But lately, they're finding it increasingly tough to buy groceries or get a cup of fresh roast coffee as the 11th largest U.S. city struggles with the recession and the auto industry crisis. This kind of goes back to how one problem can lead to other problems, and it's always going to end up affecting food in some way, I think. No national grocery chain operates a store in Detroit. A lack of outlets that sell fresh produce and meat has led the United Food and Commercial Workers Union and a community group to think about building a grocery store of its own. The lack of grocery stores is especially problematic. The last two mainstream chain groceries closed in 2007 when the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company sold most of the Southeast Michigan stores in its Farmer Jack chain to Kroger Corporation, which declined to purchase the chain's two Detroit locations, which caused them to close. Then a 2007 study found that more than half of Detroit residents had to travel twice as far to reach a grocery store than a fast food outlet or convenience store. Yeah, man. We're playing a broken record now, aren't we? Discount grocer Aldi, Inc. opened stores in the city in 2001-2005. A spokeswoman said the chain is very bullish on Detroit. Farmers markets draw crowds looking for fresh produce. Well, that's a good thing. At least there's a plus there. So, it's even hitting Detroit, folks. What's not hitting Detroit? That's unbelievable. They have four sports teams and just horrible luck. Now, I don't know if I would call the Detroit Lions a sports team or a professional one anyway. Anyway, that's it for this episode, guys. Thanks for hanging out as I gassed off all the stuff I had from Sacramento. Trust me, it was weighing on my head. It was an eye-opening experience, and I felt overloaded with how much I had to say, and I hope I did it justice. I hope I was concise enough and kind of gave you an idea of what it's like. Music in this episode, again, by Marilyn Manson. If you like the music, download it from the iTunes store. Go to mylifeasafoodie.com, click the link, and get the whole thing, 99 cents. And listen, I don't care what kind of hate comments this show might generate. Fast food, big business, they can suck it. Paula Deen fans, come get some, bitches. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Go get them, killers. I don't care if you're wrong.